Okay. Welcome back to episode 18 of Bridge CRE. My name is Brandon Jenkins, and I am your host. And my co-host, unfortunately, is at home sick, is what she's telling me. My guess is she's probably auditioning out for other podcasts. No, I'm just playing. Candace, we miss you here. Get better. And we look forward to you being back on the next episode. But I'm going to go ahead and jump right into it. I'm very excited about this episode. I have with me Chris Hintz. He's the owner of Five Star Nutrition, one of the most prominent small businesses here in Sacramento. And Chris, what's up, man? How are you?
What's going on, man? I'm doing good.
Yeah?
Lovely introduction.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun.
Prominent business in Sacramento. I don't know about that, but it's going good. 10 years in the game, so.
Hey, man, I can't complain about that. 10 years going strong.
10 years going strong. I mean, you know.
And you
all
started.
Things considered.
Right, exactly. And you started off with one shop, right, out in Greenhaven.
Yeah. So first original location opened up in the Pocket. 2011 is when we opened. And that's where I grew up, so I just picked that spot because I'm like, I know Greenhaven, this is my hood. So
right.
I was like, this is where I put my first business.
Right.
And then 2014 opened in East Sac,
right
on the cusp of Midtown East Sac, and that was the second location. And yeah, been there ever since.
Wow. So. And so do you have both? And so do you have both locations now, or just the one?
No. So we moved Greenhaven all over to East Sac.
Okay.
So we had both running only for like 6 months.
Right.
And then I wanted to consolidate because I didn't actually want two locations. I just wanted a new location.
Right.
In a more high traffic area, a little bit more central for Sacramento.
Absolutely.
You know, Greenhaven's great for Greenhaven.
Right.
But if you don't live in Greenhaven, you're not shopping in Greenhaven.
Correct.
You're not going to Pocket for any reason.
Right.
If you don't live there, right? It's not a destination.
It's in the corner of Sacramento.
Exactly. And it's a Pocket. It's literally a Pocket. So. Yeah, so I mean, I thought Midtown, East Sac, just being central to everything, the freeways and everything, was a better move for us just because a lot of people were complaining, like, oh, I got to drive all the way out to Greenhaven, and I remember
those days.
You know, so, yeah it was a good move.
It's a phenomenal move. You guys, I mean, well, first off, the location that you picked was unreal. I mean, right there, just in case anybody doesn't know, he's right there on the corner.
32nd
of Folsom, next to Alhambra. There's freeway access. You could go into downtown, into East Sac.
Landmarks would be Mr. Pickles and Cheaters.
Yeah.
Most people know where that's.
Yeah, exactly. Been to both places.
But yeah, we got lucky on that spot because it wasn't advertised. There was no commercial listing for it.
Right.
It was literally a drive-by, and you saw a sign posted in the window, like somebody had put like a handmade like for rent sign.
Right.
And the guy who owned it at the time was 93 years old.
Really?
He'd owned the building since, I don't know, whenever.
Like, right.
His family's had this thing forever.
Oh, good.
And he had three kids, and he ends up passing away like in 2016, maybe.
Oh, wow.
And then left it to his three kids, and then they ran it for a while, and then they just sold it last year to a guy who buys up commercial property all through East Sac.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How'd that transition go with you with the new ownership?
You know, it wasn't really like we weren't involved much. You know, like we had no lease. You know, when the new owner came on, we were month to month because under the previous owners, you know, they were pretty cool. They were like, hey, you know, rent's going to stay the same. Like, you know,
totally
we're not changing anything that our dad did. It's just going to stay the same. And they were great, great family. And then the new guy, less caring about probably tenants and, you know, he just probably owns too many properties and he's not hands-on. Like, that was their only building, so they did everything for it. They would landscape it. They would maintain the parking lot. Now nothing gets done.
Yeah.
Unless we do it. And, yeah. And,
like, so damn it.
And then not to mention there was like a 30% rent increase. When anybody buys a new building, they're going to have to justify the rents to be higher. So now we're paying
It's a different ball game when somebody comes in like that.
And, you know, he bought it in end of 2019. Yeah, so not even a half a year ago. And now he's already relisted it, trying to sell it for like a huge markup.
Oh, that's
so
crazy.
I don't think he'll get it, but it's just crazy.
You never know. Sacramento market.
Being a month rent with no lease, it's kind of dicey.
Yeah, I bet.
But as a business owner, you always live month to month, right?
Right, like that's life.
That's just your life. So you're like, oh, well, next month is not going to be guaranteed for anything. So
well, especially nowadays, man. I mean, going into it. So why don't you go ahead and, you know, tell our listeners a little bit about what your business actually is. Because I go in your guys' shop all the time. I get most of my supplements from them. But just a lot of my listeners are in the commercial real estate industry, but I want to let them know what you do specifically because you provide a great product.
Yeah, so I mean, essentially, we're a vitamin shop. You know, we sell all your protein powders, vitamins, pre-workouts, health supplements. You know, think of it like a GNC, but not franchised. It's just right. a locally owned, independent, but way cooler, way yeah. more knowledgeable than GNC. And so, right? yeah, we've always just kind of done our own thing. Tried to not be like the rest of the industry, which we feel is pretty boring.
Right.
You know, it's just a very corporate world of supplements. And it's, you know, the people who run the supplement industries or run the franchises, they're not people that you would even be like, this guy doesn't know the first thing about health or nutrition or, you know, like they don't right. care. They're in it for the money.
Right.
Because it's a huge industry. But, you know, I got into it because I really enjoyed it. I was into fitness and health and
right.
just talking to people about stuff. And
you did shows and stuff, right?
Yeah, I competed for a little bit, mostly nice. Just to try it and right. see what it's all about. I mean,
right.
But
you got to have that experience, you know, especially jumping.
People want to know that you know what you're talking about. Like, you've gotten into this shape before. Like, you could help me that, you know, get that way.
Right.
Because you know, you've been there.
Yeah, and you do a bunch of stuff, too. I know you got different programs. Shredder programs, very popular.
That was our biggest thing we ever started was the Shredder program. And that just came from my diet that I would follow going into contest prep, mm-hmm. right? That was the same thing. Because I looked at my own body and I said, this is the most drastic, best shape I've ever been in following this kind of eating plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I understood that most people want to be in that level of shape, even though they're not going to compete, even though they don't have a desire to get on stage. They want the ultimate goal, which right. is the leanest body, the most muscular. So
best what versions else,
what else
of
is
themselves.
There to do for them other than get them on that same type of eating regimen, supplementation right. regimen? You know, like they have to do the same things, whether or not they want to compete. If you want to look the best, you still have to do the same exact things.
Right.
So that meal plan program, the Shredder program that we started, came from that idea. It was like, look, I don't care if you're 300 pounds and you just want to lose 50 pounds. Like, you still got to eat this way. Right. To get your body to improve.
Right.
You know, and so we intentionally made it like easy, customizable, flexible, but at the same time, like focusing on like really solid principles of like what does it take to actually get your body to see results week after week.
Right.
You know, and a lot of people have a misconception about weight loss where it's like, you know, they think a 20-pound fat loss goal should be a year-long process.
Right.
And I'm like, that's insane. I'll do that in a month. 2 months maybe if I'm half-assing it, you know, but right. like, you know, it's one of those things where it's like
different mindsets.
I want people to get results as fast as possible.
Right.
And it takes obviously a different level of commitment. It takes a different level of sacrifice. But right. why wouldn't you want to do that goal in 30 days as opposed to
yeah.
a year?
A year.
You know, and it's like when they know that it's possible, it gets them more excited to try it. And they, all right, yeah, I can do anything for a month.
Right.
I can give it my all. You know,
yeah.
so
that's kind
of where that Shredder program came from. It's just an all-in kind of style of. You know,
well, dude, speaking of, you know, people's health and everything, like, that's one of the big things right now, especially with the epidemic that we're going through, COVID-19.
Yeah.
You know, one of the big things that we like to talk about is, like, you know, COVID, people with pre-existing conditions, people
right.
with all this. So, I mean, people's health is a very important thing. And so I want to know what your initial thoughts were when the whole COVID-19 thing started, especially being the industry that you're in,
mm-hmm.
Being a small business.
Yeah.
I mean, all these things are up against, especially small businesses at this time. And it's just like, it's pretty remarkable. So,
yeah. So from a business standpoint, just speaking on the business, I knew that we weren't going to close our business.
Right.
And that wasn't based on anything we were told that we could or couldn't do.
Right.
You know, the state came out with their guidelines and which businesses were essential and non-essential.
Right.
We really weren't in either category, to
right.
be honest. We kind of probably just slipped through the cracks because they couldn't list every single business type that's out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, people were like, well, I'm really happy you guys are essential, you know. And I was like, well, hey, we think we are.
Right.
And we definitely think, you know, if health is the priority right now, that's what we service. We help people get healthy. We sell vitamins. We sell protein. We make meal plans for people to help them lose weight, get
right.
them in a healthier range. So if anybody's essential, why wouldn't we be? You know, I mean, if McDonald's and Taco Bell are essential because they serve food, like,
yeah.
that gets people... sick. It's like, I think we could be, you know.
Absolutely.
Essential. So I knew from a business perspective, like, we weren't ever going to close.
Right.
Like, it didn't matter what, you know, was said or not said. Like, I just knew. I was like, I can't afford to close as a small business owner. You know, like, a 3 month layoff from your business, it just you're under. You're
small not, business, you're never they're no, it's crucial.
You'd be so far in the hole, you'd be like, well, it doesn't it make sense to reopen.
To yeah.
And so, I stayed open, and we've done well. I mean, you know, considering things are not as good as they would be at this time of year, but
yeah, we're still, exactly. You know, you're surviving.
We're surviving. We're going. And then on the what I thought initially about the COVID-19, the coronavirus, I mean, it's easy to say this now because we're in June.
Right.
But I was telling anybody who had listened back in March, and this may sound controversial or whatever.
Yeah.
But I was telling everyone, don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
Do not worry about this virus.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what you think it is. It's not as deadly. It's not as dangerous. It's, you know, it's going to be for some people, right? Like every year, flu kills anywhere from 50,000 to 100,000 people. Like viruses will always be deadly for a certain class of people.
Right.
Right. And we know that, like you said, pre-existing condition types and super, super elderly, right? Who are always one inch away from something, you know?
Next step.
Yeah. So I was like, look, you know, you don't have to worry about it. Like you may get it, but you should kind of want it. You should kind of want it to pass through you.
Especially as a younger,
the recovery rate is younger generation. Insanely high. Younger, yeah. And even older but healthy. Like, even like my parents who are in their 60s, like, I wasn't worried about them getting it.
Right.
I wouldn't even worry about my grandparents getting it, and they're in their 80s, you know, because they're healthy 80-year-olds.
Right.
There's a difference. I mean, I'd be much more worried for a 60-year-old who's obese than an 84-year-old who still, my grandmother does Zumba class 5 days a week.
Yeah.
So, you know,
it's two different lifestyles.
Lifestyles, the biggest thing, though. It's like, how have you treated your body for your whole life? Where are you sitting currently with your current health?
Right.
Is your immune system just completely non-existent and you're susceptible to anything that comes along?
Right.
Could be corona, could be type A flu, could be type B flu, could be anything. I mean,
when
you're vulnerable, you're vulnerable. So there's no protecting those people from everything unless we tell them, don't go outside, quarantine yourself.
Right.
And if that's the level of risk that they want to undergo because they understand their vulnerability, then that's up to them to decide.
Right.
But everybody
It's all else, personal choices at the end of the day.
It has to be a personal choice because everybody else who is healthy is not at risk at forgetting. You know, they may catch it like you would catch a cold.
Right.
And you'd beat it and you'd be like, well, it sucked. Nobody likes getting sick, but I'm glad I'm over it.
Have you done any antibody testings or anything like that?
No. I refuse to do any tests. Nobody's coming near me with any tests.
And what is that thing? Before you
I'll tell you that I don't have the antibodies. If I do or don't, it doesn't matter. I'm healthy,
right?
Right. I'm not sick. So
I
why should I
completely
test
agree? Right.
You know, and I think the thing that got everybody freaked out was when they started saying, even if you're healthy, right, you could still possibly give it to somebody else.
That was the concern.
The misinformation that was spread so fast that we all were like, well, you know, we don't want to be inconsiderate.
No.
I don't want to kill anybody.
Responsible. Responsible citizen, right?
But that's how they got everybody to go along with
it. It's playing your part.
Yeah, do your part. And that you saw that pounded into your head a million times on the freeway. You look at the freeway signs.
Yeah.
Wash your hands. Stay home. Save lives.
It's
that's insane. That's not true.
Yeah.
Like, you're not saving lives by staying home. If anything, you could kill all your whole family if you got them all sick, right? If it
were
this deadly.
Right.
I'd rather not be staying home. You know?
It's one of those things, dude. It's one of those things that because I know we locked down but my wife's in the nurse. She's a nurse.
And they felt it more because they were in
they're on the front lines.
The front lines, exactly.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, you know, like, we're going to see these cases because that's where they're coming. The cases that do exist will come to those places. You know, those same hospitals.
Yeah.
And so hospital workers should be on high alert. They should.
But they're telling people, you're going to get it anyways.
Well, that's
so what does it matter?
And lots of people got it, told the hospital, like, hey, I got it. And they told them, stay home.
Yeah.
They weren't even telling them to come. They're like, just stay home then. Don't come here if you already know you have it.
It's right.
Like, why would I?
Quarantine yourself. Like, where do I go? Where do I go?
Anyways.
Where do I go? What do I do?
Yeah. And so I just think, like, you know, when it comes to health, like, we got to be proactive. Not reactive, right? Like,
absolutely. We're in such a reactive state right now with this.
Do the things necessary to keep you healthy always.
Right.
Don't wait until something happens and then freak out.
Right.
Which is everybody now. It's like, oh, we got all these unhealthy people. Half of America is obese.
Yeah.
Well, let's address that.
Yeah.
What can we do to fix that?
Exactly.
So the next go around, we don't have 50% of our population at high risk. for everything.
Well, it seems like half America is actually might possibly be doing something, because even though gyms are open, like, I don't know if you look, but gym equipment price, all that shit, dude, has gone up through the roof.
Well, yeah, but that's just a supply and demand issue. That's not exactly like people wanting to be more healthy. That's people who are already fit looking for their workout gear.
That's
it's
true.
It's not unhealthy people looking for workout
gear. Yeah, that's true. That's
like,
a good point.
I'm going to watch Netflix. I'm going to load up on snacks. I'm going to quarantine. And I'm going to make myself sicker.
Yeah.
I mean, that's essentially what the advice was for everybody, was stay home.
Yeah.
Don't go
shelter
out.
In, yeah.
Shelter in place. What's everyone going to do when they shelter in place?
That's a scary thing, dude.
Drink more.
I
eat
did.
More crap. Watch more shows.
I was drinking.
That's what everybody does.
Sure.
That's, and they know that.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like, you, of course you're going to do that. You're bored. You're so bored.
It's a slippery slope, dude.
It's a horrible.
It was just very slippery slope.
It's just all the advice is bad. And when you know the advice is bad, and you're like, well, if I know it to be bad and not true,
right,
I can't go along with it. I can't just
participate
in this, whatever this is, this exercise in, let's see what happens
social
when we
experiment.
Do these things. Yeah, a social experiment, right? Like, let's see what happens when we social distance. Let's see what happens when we quarantine.
Right.
We've never done these things.
It's
we've
amazing.
Never, ever. And now let's just see what happens.
Well, dude,
and
I was...
I don't want to be...
Yeah, go ahead.
Being experimented on. Like, I want to be like...
I don't blame you. And to tell you the truth, like, you know, being 3 months into it, you're starting to hear like, oh, yeah, well, this COVID thing's, you know, it's people got sick. The people with pre-existing conditions, did, you know, deaths happen, things like that. But, I mean, what happens if it was like a deadly fucking virus?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Let's say it was the plague, right?
Yeah.
Like the Middle Ages plague where, you know, almost 30% of Europe gets wiped out.
Yeah.
And it's that deadly. You're going to watch bodies stack up in the street.
Yeah.
You're going to just see people keeling over and dying.
Right.
At that point.
With your own eyes. Not.
Yeah.
Right.
You're going to see it. You're not going to be like ignorant to the fact like, yeah, that's pretty scary out there. Like, you know, but like that was also pre-modern medicine times of like we couldn't stop a normal
virus. No, it was totally different,
you know,
times.
Like, and so, yeah, like, it would have to reach those levels of, like, yeah, everybody's dying. You get it, you're dead. It's 100% mortality rate, not 0.001% mortality, which we're seeing. And it's like, look, what's the general mortality rate every year in America?
Right.
Right? Like, what's the percentage of the population that dies off every year in America?
Right.
I'm not good at math, but, like, on average, if 7,000 people a day die, times that by 365, you got quite a lot of people that die every year in America.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, so we're not going to stop death.
It's more of a risk driving your vehicle down the street.
Everything's
still
more of a risk
probably
than getting sick and dying of the flu, you know, or COVID or whatever you get. Right?
Yeah.
Like, everything's more of a risk than that.
Right.
So it's like, you're never going to eliminate risk. You're never going to eliminate any possible ways to die. And all these experiments that they're doing to see if they can mitigate the damage is... There's plenty of studies published already that say we're doing more harm than good.
Right.
We're definitely increasing suicides, depression, alcoholism, child abuse, spousal abuse. I mean, we're just watching statistics go through the roof every day, and it's like, well, none of those matter. None of that is important. Like the things that, like,
I agree.
You know, there's so many.
There's so many variables.
There's so many variables, and they always like, you know, say like the whatever you try to do, you have to know before you attempt it, like, there's going to be repercussions. There's going to be outcomes that you can't foresee, and you're just trying to go with the best information that you have. But when that information changes day to day,
right, real-time information.
Real-time, people can't make decisions based on ever-changing information.
Right.
So you create this whole class of people who are told to do something on Monday, but now are getting the opposite advice on Wednesday, and then another change of direction on Friday, and it's like, everybody's paralyzed.
Yeah.
Everybody's waiting for direction,
right,
and they don't know which way to look because it's like it just keeps moving.
Mm-hmm.
Your goalpost just keeps shifting, and it's like
right.
We don't have a target. We don't actually know how to stop this,
right,
if there is a way to stop it at all.
Right.
But we just keep throwing things out there and seeing if this is going to work or if this is going to work or if we just do all this or if
right.
we, you know, and not knowing what the repercussions are. How many businesses? How many jobs lost? How much economic devastation?
I can tell you a lot, man.
Yeah, it's been bad. I mean, the unemployment rate speaks for itself, and I think, like, you know, something recently put out a report saying as many as 40% of small businesses in America may never recover. So almost half of all small businesses in America may never bounce back economically from this.
And they didn't get any favors either
in
regards to, you know, funding and stuff like that, especially true small businesses.
Right. Corporations got a lot of bailouts.
Yeah. There was a lot of bailouts. You know, it's it's just one of those things where it's just a crazy, but I mean, here you are and you've survived. What type of adjustments have you made in regards to your business? And I understand you kept the doors open, things like that, but I mean, there had to have been other things. You didn't just say, fuck it, I'm keeping the doors open in business. You had to think outside the box in order to...
I'd say very little adjustment, to be honest. I mean, yeah, obviously it starts with making a decision just to be open for customers.
Correct.
But then we try to just be more like customer friendly in the sense of like, we'll do whatever you need us to do to get you your stuff.
Right.
You want it delivered same day, I'll personally load up the car and go drive around Sacramento dropping off packages. And I've done that on multiple days.
Right.
We always have done free shipping. So that's always, right. We can always send it to you anywhere. We do curbside. We'll walk it out to your car.
Hmm.
You know, we'll do whatever it takes for somebody to be able to get their stuff and feel the safety that they need.
Right.
Right. Because I don't particularly care what you choose. Like, you know, you can do it any way you want. We're available to service whatever kind of demand that a customer would have.
Right.
We would just go further than we normally would.
Right.
Right. Like, I will just do more now than I've ever had to do in the past. Right.
Right.
Like, hey, yeah, I spent a whole afternoon driving all over different parts of Sacramento to deliver like 5 boxes of stuff. Yeah. But it's like,
it's what you have to do.
You just got
to
do it. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's probably the only real change, is like just doing a little bit more.
Yeah.
But ultimately, just keep going.
Right.
You know, just keep being there. Keep moving forward. You know, we get a ton of phone calls like, hey, you guys open? I'm like, yeah, we're open. You know, okay, good. You know, it's like, yeah, man. I mean,
I was surprised.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that.
A lot of people call us, they're like, hey, have you reopened? And I'm like, we never not. You know, we weren't open.
Yeah.
But people just expect you to have been closed. So, you know, like, it definitely impacted business. And, you know, we saw a huge decrease in foot traffic and things like that. But, yeah, just keep going.
What about online sales?
Online sales definitely picked up, at least in the month of April. We saw a big jump in April, which was hugely helpful because that was kind of at the peak of all this like frenzy. Then it kind of returned to like normal level for May and June. So online, we've always had it. It's, you know, it goes in, it's maybe 20% of our business. You know, in store is still
100%
of where we're at. So
right. So did you get any, so what about from ownership of the building or anything like that, or like other assistance?
Yeah.
Were people accommodating or?
No. So like, I won't name any names on there. You don't know who my owner is.
I don't.
But no,
they
never called. You know, they never reached out. They never wanted to know anything that was going on with us. I actually had to initiate a call to address the fact that we were still going to send in our rent check,
right?
Because I just wanted them to know, hey, we're still staying open, so we're going to keep mailing in rent,
right?
And they were like, okay, great, thanks.
Wow.
And I was like, all right. But my next door neighbor,
brutal.
Who I my next door neighbor, who I share a building with and a parking lot with, he decided to close, and he's been closed for 3 months now because he's a, you know, different type of business, and he just didn't, you know, I think he was worried about people at home, and so he just made the decision to close it, and you know, it's his business. So, but you know, I'm pretty sure he hasn't been paying rent,
right?
So, but they never brought it up to me, and we're like, hey, well, you know, are you guys, you know, it was just kind of like, oh, great, yeah, just keep sending the rent checks. And I knew what my options were. I could have not paid rent.
Right.
I could have done what a lot of renters were doing.
Probably not.
Just saying, don't pay rent.
You're right.
But I also know I'm on a month-to-month lease.
Right.
So I could probably not get evicted for these few months while this is all happening.
Right.
Let's say when this all blows over and next January comes around, they're like, guess what? Because you withheld rent for us for 6 months, like, you know, without asking or whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
You try to do the right thing.
Yeah, you're not getting a new lease.
Yeah.
When you need it. And so.
Absolutely.
Just. As long as I'm open and I can pay the rent, I'll pay the rent.
Right.
And if I can't pay the rent, then they'll know because they won't get a check.
That's simple.
That's it.
That's crazy. Well, man, I can imagine a lot of people, especially the small businesses, are struggling super hard. And it's just been rough times, and, you know, we've been impacted not by the COVID thing, not by the COVID-19 thing, but also by the you know, the protesting, which then, you know, got elevated into, you know, riots and things like that. So,
yeah.
I mean, we got a full dose of...
It seemed like they just overlapped, you know, it was like right when businesses, I think, were starting to like feel a sense of like, we could kind of start to be more open, and you saw restaurants kind of picking up a little bit, and people were kind of doing things. Like, then the riots, then the protests start, right? And then immediate, like, another sense of like shutdown in the sense of like a lot of business... 80% of the businesses around me boarded up.
Yeah, dude.
Right? I can't drive down Folsom and it's like boards everywhere.
It's crazy.
And,
it's like walking into like Western movie or some shit.
Like, this place just looks uninhabited.
It looks super uninhabited.
And all my business associates in the neighborhood, you know, the different business owners, they kind of have like a little coalition. And they're like, hey, like, you know, this is what we're going to do. We're going to be on a group text, a group email chain. So if anything goes on in the neighborhood, we can let each other know.
Right.
And I was like, oh, that's cool. Okay. And they're like, yeah. And then we're also all boarding up. And I was like, well, I'm not going to board up because I'm going to stay open. You know, I mean, and I'm not going to put up boards and then take them down the next day. And, you know.
Every day. So, yeah.
So they were like, you know, really pressuring me. Like, hey, you should really do this. Like, I mean, for a solid half of the day, I was getting, you know, the different business owner. Chris, you should really put up boards, man. Like, I think it's going to be really
bad. Nobody's touched your billing.
Yeah. And I was like, you know, I'll roll the dice. Like, I just don't, like, there's a lot of businesses in Sacramento. There's a ton of windows in Sacramento.
Yeah.
They could be smashing anything they wanted to. I mean, it could happen.
Yeah.
But it also is much more likely that it won't happen.
I don't think it's going to happen.
And it didn't, you know,
thankfully.
But even if it had, it's like, then deal with it as it happens.
Cross that bridge when you get to it.
And that's kind of how I felt about the whole Corona thing.
Yeah.
Cross the bridge when you need to.
Maybe.
Not way before and not even knowing that there's ever going to need to go to the other side. Like, it's just, you know, we're always, it seems to be, we're reacting to things that we don't know what the outcome's going to be. So we're doing things preemptively that, you know, like, okay, just using the same analogy. Like, you boarded up, you spent $500. You paid somebody to come out and board up your whole business. Well, that was just a waste of $500, right?
Right.
So there's no harm, no foul in that grander sense of things. You just lost $500.
Yeah.
Okay. But if you
it's almost like insurance.
Yeah. But if you use that same perspective with Corona, well, we did all these things. We boarded up. We quarantined. But we lost a much greater amount.
Yeah.
We lost, you know, 20% plus unemployment. We lost 40% of small businesses. We lost deaths by suicide. I mean, we lost a tremendous amount by something that we didn't stop.
Right.
And we haven't stopped.
No.
And we may never, ever really understand how, you know, these viruses are going to go and who's going to be affected and who's not. But you didn't solve anything. You fixed nothing. And you're going to keep throwing solutions out there that are going to keep creating more damage just on their own. Because you know those are going to create problems. You don't know whether they're going to fix the problem, but you know they're going to create problems.
Right.
So it's like it's not even a damned if you do, damned if you don't, because it's really like you're damned if you do, and we don't know what happens if you don't. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So at least there's a 50-50 on the don't do anything, but there's 100% damned by doing stuff.
Right.
So I look at it, and I'm like, I can't knowingly do things that I know are already going to have bad outcomes. I can't, you know, you can't control the future. You can't predict what's going to happen next, but you can deal with reality as it comes and not just pretend you can do things that you don't know what's going to happen on.
Yeah,
right? Like,
who does know?
That's the point.
Yeah.
And none of these people tell us what they do know.
No.
And that's when it gets insane to be like, we're listening to people who don't know anything.
Hmm.
That makes me really frightened to be like, why would I listen? I don't understand. Like, I look around and I'm like, we're listening to who?
Yeah.
Like, literally. World
Health Organization.
But we're listening.
Literally.
We're literally listening. But, you know.
This is good. This is phenomenal.
They've admitted so many times to being wrong, so many times to having to readjust. And it's like, well, how does anybody feel comfortable listening to that?
Yeah. Just letting it play out.
Let it play out.
Yeah.
Let it go.
Yeah.
Other countries have let it play out and let it go, and they've had great success.
Mm.
And I'm in medical science. I'm not in that stuff, so I don't even care.
Yeah, let's go, Dr. Hansen. Yeah, I mean, let's go. Let's figure this out.
Yeah, who's this guy? Shut him up.
That's classic.
I mean, you know, just, I don't know.
It's crazy, man.
I
agree.
It's just a philosophy
right here with
on
you.
Life, right? Just how are you going to deal with things in the future?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know because it hasn't happened, so
right.
I don't know how I'm going to deal with it.
Right.
I'll deal with it
when I have to
deal with it.
I'll let you know.
I have a broken window. I'll call my insurance company.
Yeah.
I'll call the glass repair company. I
right.
know how to handle it.
Right.
But I'm not going to do these things preemptively, you know, like,
no.
You have other costs associated with your preemptive, whatever you want to do, your quarantining and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But also, then that's how it's going to become for everything. We're going to preemptively do things based on just crappy information.
Right.
You know, like based on what we think is going to possibly happen, let's do all this crazy stuff we've never done before.
It's like, mm-hmm. Well, it's not just us, it's the world.
Right.
It's not just us.
Is that even crazier?
That's nuts, dude. It's the world, bro.
Because what's crazy to me is the WHO, the World Health Organization. How can there be an organization that dictates policy for the world?
Yeah.
Because every country is different. Every single remote location in the earth is different. Everybody's got different circumstances. I mean, just like no two businesses in Sacramento are going to be the exact same.
Right.
No countries are going to be the same.
Right.
No populations are going to be the same. How does a World Health Organization actually
different
think
lifestyles,
it can make a policy
cultures.
For the world?
That's general.
Yeah.
General policies.
General just means useless, right? Like, you're just basically, like, 99% of people who use this information won't get any value of it. Maybe it helps the 1%.
Right.
Or, you know, like,
yeah.
It's like, don't do anything, and you're going to have a better success rate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sad that the best policy is literally just don't.
Right.
Don't act. Don't act because you think you have to. Act, you know, like, it's not even like, you know, people would say, well, you're just being unprepared. It's like, it's not being unprepared because you can't prepare for every scenario that could ever come your way.
It's not possible.
You cannot possibly have enough preparedness.
Mm-hmm.
If you were listening to the advice, you'd go buy insurance for every natural disaster possible in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You'd buy insurance on just dying from anything.
Right.
And then it still wouldn't be enough coverage.
Bubble.
Because you still wouldn't be able to cover everything.
Oh, yeah.
You know? It's like, what would...
Life happens.
Yeah, life. Yeah, it's short. It's not guaranteed. You're going to get between 0 to 100, you know?
It's crazy, and, man.
You know, I don't know.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's crazy.
How far off topic are we? We still on?
No, yeah, I don't know, dude.
Okay.
We're here.
Okay.
And we're talking. Okay. That's what's good. Dude, so next question.
Yeah.
Predictions for foreseeable small businesses. Let's say through the end of the year.
Okay.
What do you think?
Here I am talking about not looking into the future. Well, let's make predictions. Based
what
on
people
what I
want
see,
to do, just small
like,
business.
Because I look at patterns.
Let's
do
take it
at,
down. Let's take it down a notch. Let's just think either California or just Sacramento, just California. Mm-hmm. Where do you think small businesses are going to be? What's they're going to be their biggest challenges heading towards the end of the year?
Their biggest challenge is going to be if they're a small business owner, they own their business, and they have to remember that they own their business, right? That's
mm-hmm.
the definition of being a small business owner, right? You are the guy in charge.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody else can really come along and tell you, like, how to run your business. That's the benefits of being your own owner, right?
Own boss, right?
No boss. No city council member, no state official, no governor, right? Like, this is my business. You didn't
mm-hmm.
buy it. You didn't build it.
Right.
You don't really have a say in it,
right?
Right? Even though I operate in this state, it doesn't matter. You don't own the state,
right?
And so I think what small business owners need to understand is it is your business and only your business, and only you can protect it, and only you can actually make it succeed or not.
Mm-hmm.
No other outside agency will ever care about your business. They'll
mm-hmm.
never care whether it goes under, whether it thrives. It doesn't mean anything to them.
Mm-hmm.
So if they tell you how to operate your business, if they come along, which they have already done, and a
mm-hmm.
lot of people listened, and this is what we think you should do with your hair salon or your gym or this or that and the other,
right.
You should be like, thanks for the advice, but I'll do what's in the best interest of my gym
right.
or my ex business or whatever business is.
Yeah.
So that's the scary thing, is looking at how many business owners already followed all the things they thought they should have done. How much I've watched them all suffer. I've watched them all
yeah.
lose tremendous amounts of money and clientele and all these things. And I go, they did that to you by telling you what to do. And you listened because you thought you were doing the right thing.
Right.
But in so doing, now your business may never come back.
Right.
And you're lucky if you're even reopening now. And let's say you are reopening now. But look, a month later, they tell you to close it again. Are you going to listen? Are
mm-hmm.
you going to keep doing what they tell you to do based on information that has not proven to be accurate,
right.
like, or of any significance that we should really be worried about?
Right.
And so I think the struggle for small businesses will be, what are you listening to, right? Like, why are you listening to it, number one, right? Like, if they don't have a ownership stake in your business, they really shouldn't have a say in your business.
you know, and this is, you know, everybody's going to think about it differently. Everyone's going to have a different view on it. And mm-hmm. they should be allowed to make the best decision for their business. You know, they mm-hmm. should say, hey, like, I feel comfortable doing this or I don't feel comfortable doing this with my business.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Do that. You know, and so the struggles will be, I do foresee the state getting more restrictive, not less.
Right.
So even though people think things are opening up now, I don't think, I mean, just yesterday, Gavin Newsom said mask policy in force for all public places everywhere you go.
Right. I remember seeing that.
So that was yesterday.
Even outside, right?
Even outside. You're now being told if you live in California,
yeah,
just the whole entire state, doesn't matter if you live in a town of 10 people or 10 million, right? Like, it doesn't matter. Like,
Redding Sacramento.
Yeah, you're making a policy.
Fresno or L.A.
You're making a policy for an entire state. Kind of like a smaller version of the WHO, where you can't make a one-size-fits-all policy. It doesn't work because there's just not one size for everybody, right?
Right.
And so, back to the small business question. I think if you're not willing to defend your small business in the sense of doing whatever you need to do to keep it going and make it survive and make it thrive, you know, because it is your finances, it's your livelihood tied to it,
yeah,
then you're going to probably not be happy with the way the state tries to intervene and interfere and regulate and do all these things. And so you're going to have to fight back and you're going to have to say no. And that's the biggest thing I think people need to understand. You can say no.
Right.
Like, I think there's a big fear of what's going to happen. And again, don't deal in that hypothetical what-if scenario. Just say, right now, today, we're open, and this is how we're operating. If next month looks different because they came out with a SWAT team and they told me to close my business, then I have a decision to make. I can either close my business, or I can see what happens if I say no again.
Yeah, I'm either going to go see my family, or I'm going to go see Ray Ray over at County Jail.
Yeah. So,
okay, I understand.
I guess what is your level of risk, you know, on that sense?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people don't want to take any risk, it seems like, in this world, right? Like,
right.
We're trying to all risk of dying.
Small businesses, yeah. I mean, there's people, I mean, protesters and
being
stuff like that.
Being a small business owner is risky. Probably the riskiest shit.
It's got to be. I have so much respect for small businesses.
There's no more uncertain lifestyle that you could choose than being a small business owner.
It's month to month, man. It's crazy.
Day to day sometimes.
I bet.
Month to month. Yeah. I mean, there's
no scary times now.
You don't have a guaranteed salary. You have nothing to bank on other than your previous sales history to look back on and be like, oh, well, we had a few good months here. Like, we should be okay if things trend in the same direction.
The problem is that government, I mean, they are trying to do some type of relief, right? The federal fundings, the states coming out with different.
The federal funding. The state, what has the state done?
The state.
What has the state done?
So there's different fundings. There's different fundings that if you do not apply, if you get denied or can't apply or get denied for the EIDL or the PPP loans, then you could actually, the California has an iBank program, which that they're doing, which is more on the smaller end.
So how much are they giving?
It's like $50,000 or something like that. Okay. So,
so,
but it's, I mean,
yeah,
but it's good. Also,
but at the same time, yeah, nobody's going to get enough money to save their business.
But the thing is, what's $50,000? Nobody knows what $50,000 is going to get you.
Yeah.
$50,000, I mean, don't know what kind of business that, but right. I mean, that
is it
might
a business
keep.
Business with one employee, is it a business with 100 employees?
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
You know, it's like, yeah, the money and the.
How far is it going to go?
Yeah, there's.
Nobody knows.
Even with the PPP, it's like a lot of businesses got it. And, you know, did they use it on retaining their employees? Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. They could have kept it all, they could have pocketed it all and laid everybody off. And then, sure, it's expected to be paid back. But, again,
yeah,
who is going to go through the work of auditing,
I don't know,
5-10 million businesses that receive PPP loans? Or, you know, however many people were getting money just hand over fist, handed out with no regulation.
Right.
How do you go backwards and then say, well, now let's look into all that and see where all that money was spent?
Yeah, see where we're at.
Good luck. Good luck performing a worldwide audit.
Way over my pay grade, dude. I'll tell you that.
don't want to be that finance man.
Yeah. I think he's sitting at the treasury somewhere. Dude, it's crazy times, dude. What do you so last question I have for you, dude. We're at about the 40-minute mark.
Yeah.
But last question I have for you, and it's actually kind of a silly question because I'm but what we want to do is offer people advice for anybody who does want to get into small business, although right now is the shittiest time to do it.
Don't do it
right now.
End of the interview.
But because you've actually given a lot of great advice for people who are probably going through the struggle right now, you know, doesn't know what, you know, tomorrow's going to bring for them,
right,
in regards to their business and their livelihoods.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still a lot of people out there, entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, this, a big portion of this country is founded on, you know, entrepreneurs and, you know, everything else. So what type of advice would you give to those people listening who still hasn't given up the, you know, dream of, oh shit, well, I wanted to open this up, or I wanted, or I still wanted to do this, or, you know, something of that nature. What kind of advice would you give to them?
I would look at what, I guess, you know, if you're going to start a business, the number one thing you want to know is, well, it really depends on the person, I guess, you know, because if you have a great job right now, paying you benefits, and maybe you get to work from home,
right,
why would you want to go do something else? Why would you want to go start a business that could fail in a month because of all these regulations that are being put on small businesses?
Right.
If you have no job and you don't have anything to lose anyways, you might as well go start a business. Right. Even if it works out for 3 months and then it blows up, who cares? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it's like,
why not?
You know, going into debt shouldn't be scary. Like, you know, to start a business, I think a lot of people's biggest fear with starting businesses is losing money.
Absolutely.
And I never really had that fear, I think, when I started my business 10 years ago. Even though I had no money and I went into some debt to start it, I was like, so what? I'll lose the money and then I'll just have to go find a job and then pay on that debt and tell him, you know, whatever.
Like, yeah,
you'll figure it out.
Right.
You'll adapt, and you'll, when those things are presented before you, if they come,
right,
then you'll handle it.
Right.
And I, it's just the same mindset. Like, don't think my business could fail. Just think, I want to do this business. It's something I'm passionate about. It's something I want to start. I think it's a good idea. I think I can do really well in this space. Then go do it.
Right.
Don't weigh out all the possible negatives, costs, because it's not going to be like 99% of them won't happen, you know, and you may go in a whole different direction anyways.
Right.
And you can never foresee what those next moves are going to be.
No.
When I opened my store, like, I knew, like, look, at the very least, if I can make what I made working for somebody else, you know, that's a wash, but at least I have the freedom of being my own boss and things like that. But it comes with the uncertainty of no guaranteed paycheck. There's no, hey, I get $6,000 every month. You know, it's maybe 1 month you have three times that.
Right.
Maybe 1 month you have not anything. You know, like, I mean, so it could be that way. And you have to be comfortable with that uncomfortableness. But
yeah.
I don't think there's risks to doing it. I think it's just like, yeah, it's just as much as you want to put into it. You know, I mean, businesses will fail all the time because people don't want to be in their business.
Mm-hmm.
They want the idea of a business. They want the concept of a business. They think it'll be fun. They think it'll be like all this excitement.
Yeah.
But it's still work.
Hard work.
It's always going to be work. Mm-hmm. And it could be a better form of work if you really liked it. But it's still work, and you still got to want to be there. Especially,
right.
I mean, if you're a real small business, like how we operate with, like, you know, less than 5 employees, like,
yeah,
a real small business means there's no stepping out of the business. There's no starting a company and walking away and just being, it's going to run itself and do
right.
well. You know, it's like, you're just still there.
Yeah.
10 years later, I'm
hands
still
on.
Working in my shop. You
right.
know, like, so it's given me a comfortable life, but it's also not something I can just put pause on and, you know.
Right.
You got to stay involved. You got to
stay Absolutely.
Involved to do it. And when you don't, then you should look to sell and move on.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody has any risks at this point. Like, we could all die of COVID tomorrow. We could all die of COVID by the end of the year. So go start your business, man.
Go make it happen. Let's stay positive.
Right.
Yeah.
Act like you're going to live forever, but realize you're not.
You know? Absolutely.
Let's go do it, man.
Dream as if you'll live forever. Live as if you're going to die today.
Is that a quote?
Yeah, I just came up with that.
Oh,
that
yeah,
no,
yeah.
I'm joking.
read that
on a James Dean poster or something.
Right, yeah. I don't think anybody has any risk other than, like, the financial, right? And then the financial is just, who cares?
Right.
Like, what's the matter if you go into debt?
You're going to have debt anyways,
everybody
right?
Everybody has debt.
Yeah.
Every American who has a mortgage has a crazy amount of debt that they couldn't pay off right now if they wanted to.
Right.
So everyone's trapped into some form of debt. might as well, if you're young and you don't have any other forms of debt, it's like, yeah, I'll put my debt into my business.
Yeah.
I'll invest it into myself.
Right.
Not into a home.
Right.
That house could burn down. That house could, you know, flood. I mean,
who knows?
There's no safe thing. It's just go do it.
Yeah.
See what happens.
Awesome, man. Well, great advice. I'm with you. Stay positive. People get out there. Let's let's make business happen. Stay positive. Get out there, invest in yourself.
And don't give up on your business. Don't walk away from it. You know, don't let somebody close it if you don't.
You know,
they're not forcing.
Don't
it,
let. Yeah.
You know, like if they're just telling you to, don't listen.
Yeah. All right, man. Awesome. So, Chris, thanks again, bro. Everybody, Chris, please go check out Mr. Hintz. He's over at Five Star Nutrition and ESAC, top of the line supplements. Great conversation, and even a better dude. So, thank you for being a guest, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yep, and we're out.
All right.